There is no wisdom to your freedom. The richest man is Babylon.
This is Melissa. It is Real History on the 16th day of July, 2026, and I am here today with Ron in Canada. Hello.
Hello, Melissa, and hello to the Cutting Through the Matrix audience. Before we start, I just wanted to give a big thank you to you personally for continuing the work of Alan. I think it's so important. Alan was a profound influence in my life. I was devastated when he died, and I envision him right now sitting on top of a mountain as an ascended master with Hamish by his side.
I love
that.
And a
guitar. Yeah. And a guitar.
I love that. That's a great image.
Through the Scamdemic, I found was probably his most important time. He was coming on for like 4 hours at a time. I know his last broadcast, I have it in my YouTube playlist. It was like 4 hours long, and he was totally committed. And, I just know he's in a really good place right now. So.
Well, that is true. You know, I used to tell him that I envisioned that the hereafter might be a place where he could just ride around on his motorcycle all the time. Of course, I'd be there and there'd be a sidecar for Hamish. I said, and when when we're home, I'll just make chocolate chip cookies, and you can play the guitar. So it's kind of like heaven, eh?
So, yeah, I think he's in a really good place right now, looking down. So,
I do too. I do too. Well, yeah, that last year, my goodness, I think there was even one or two talks that he went as long as 6 hours.
I believe so. Yeah, I think there
Yeah.
was even longer than 4 hours
Yeah.
here.
But the average was, and he was cranking it out, and oh my goodness, the articles that went along with each one. I speak to, I'm not complaining, but he used to say, "Why is it taking you so long to get that ready to go up?" And I said, "Well, if you do an hour talk, you can, factor in that it's about 2 hours worth of editing and all the things that I need to do to complete it and get the articles up there." I said, basically, my experience is as long as you talk, double it for editing and cleaning it up and, cleaning out your coughs or your ahems or, that kind of thing. He said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, you're doing a 4 hour talk. That's me editing for about 8 hours to go all the way through and listen carefully." And then he was doing, going through 40 and 50 articles a week. And I was helping him find those articles too, and sometimes organizing them into themes. And so it was a very intense year. And we both knew right at the very beginning of the scam that this is it. This is the big thing that's going to allow them to get so much rammed through. And sure enough, that's how it turned out to be.
I know when it came, I knew it was not, it was something different for sure, and that there was something definitely behind it.
Yes. At the very, very beginning, you have no idea what's going on. That, is it has a bioweapon of some sort been released? So you're taking all kinds of precautions because you don't know. I know there's a lot of terrain theory versus germ theory, et cetera, but be that as it may, biowarfare is a real thing. Toxins can be released that are quite scary. So, yeah, we took it totally seriously. And then at a certain point, when you see the footage of the Chinese man falling down, for the 150th time, you start to say, "Well, I think that there's a fear operation at work here."
A little different for me when it first came out. I called shenanigans immediately. I really did. I knew. I just said something. This is no. I'm not falling for this. So I wasn't doing the mask thing, and I just I knew kind of right away that this that it was bullshit as far as I'm concerned. So,
Yeah.
and I
Well,
turned out to be right.
it was a crazy time, and in Canada it was very intense. I mean, like I say, we quickly figured out, no, this is not what they're saying that it is. But you'd go into town, and they had, the plexiglass. Remember the plexiglass that was up everywhere at
Oh my
Canadian?
God. Yeah. When I at that time I was looking for other people like-minded. So that's when I turned towards the protest movement, even though I was going there knowing full well what it was about from Alan's many talks over many years about what goes on in the protest movement. I went and saw for myself, and I just confirmed everything that he had said, and that there's no such thing as a real grassroots movement. I think once you get above five or six people, you can be infiltrated. And when I was down there, At these protests, I wasn't doing the rah-rah thing. I was a pretty quiet guy. I just wanted to be around some like-minded people. But I ended up, discovering that the movement here, at least in Edmonton, Alberta, it's a city of 1 million people, and we would get like maybe 200 or 300 people out for a protest, which was pretty sad, right? But I had identified things that were going on, like the protests, they would do speeches and all this sort of thing, and then they'd go for a march. But because of my arthritis, I would sit back, and there would always be this group of men that was hanging back. And I ended up talking to some of them, and they were all Freemasons, all admitting that they were, right? So this was kind of like, oh, these guys don't even go on the walks. I guess they're kind of running things or something was going on. So I knew that they had infiltrated for sure, and that the whole thing was just, I think they were, I think it was almost an exercise in misleading people and turning them into a direction where it's like a cul-de-sac, kind of a dead end where you're not really getting anything happening. You're just kind of making people go around in circles and stuff. So eventually, and I had met some pretty eccentric people in there too, that I'm not sure if they were planted to make the whole movement look bad. I think there was a bunch of things done to make the protesters look bad in the eyes of the public.
What were some examples of the kinds of things and the kind of people that you think might have been planted to make it look bad?
Well, I would, first of all, I drew attention to myself by being like a kind of a quiet guy, a gray man. So I would sit around and just listen to stuff and all that. And I knew that I was drawing the attention of certain individuals there. And when it's just when you've been there long enough, you start to, from all your observations, you start to, I would just watch like who's hanging with who type of thing. And sometimes I would listen in on conversations where somebody would come in and into a couple people's conversation and start talking, but then they wouldn't say a thing after, and they just stand there and listen to what the others are saying. How do I explain some of this? You had to kind of be there.
Was it that did they give off the vibe that they were just collecting intel more
Yes,
than
absolutely.
participating?
Yeah, that's the vibe I was getting, is that people were there to collect intelligence on other people. And amongst the so-called leadership of the protest movement, there was a lot of big egos involved. I believe that some theater was going on with like public conflict between a couple of the leaders and stuff, and it didn't look real. It looked fake. I guess just my sixth sense was catching up, catching on a lot of things, right? So, eventually, I just stopped going down there because it wasn't doing anything for me. Or
I want to put a little placeholder here because I don't want to talk about it just yet, but earlier we were having a conversation and you told me about somebody in particular. I'm pretty sure if my memory serves, you said that they were somebody that you met at a protest group. But I want to put a pin on that and hold it. I wanted to just back up a minute. Well, first of all, to your t-shirt,
okay.
I said that's really cool. I like that bright bullseye, and you said it's Thievery Corporation, one of my favorite bands. And I said I never heard of them. So I'm going to have to, I'll see if I can get away with it on YouTube, but tell me your favorite song and maybe I'll plug it in here. So I can learn who
Oh,
Thievery Corporation is.
yeah. The name of the song is 33 Degree. Okay.
Ah, 33
Yeah.
degree.
33 Degree. Yeah. The lyrics are like heavy, heavy stuff. Thievery is very very like spiritual and awake kind of music, right? Like the lyrics and that kind of stuff. But yeah, 33 Degree.
Okay, I will listen to it and plug it in and see if I can get away with using it. Sometimes bands, have agreements and they let you use their song, so
The copyright, yeah.
yeah, that's cool. The second question about your attire is your pendant, the necklace is, what is that?
This is organite.
Okay, hold on a minute. Move your hand out of the way and lift it from the chain so that I can follow that. Okay, that's what I thought, that the tassel was attached to that. It was not part of the t-shirt. What's the tassel made out of?
This is coyote teeth.
Okay.
I have a strong connection to coyotes. It's the coyote spirit.
Do they come around at you and you've got to
We have
like.
coyotes around here, definitely. I've pulled several coyotes off of the roads, like dead ones, and I've put them like in the bush and covered them up and stuff. I relate to the coyote because I used to work a lot of nights. Coyotes are up all night. The other thing is that coyotes are very misunderstood and they have a target on their back, and that's me. So I relate to them.
Okay, now
And
the
I'm a
thing.
champion of the underdog, and they get slaughtered en masse. So.
That's sad. That is sad. I have read before about the coyote that they will, if it is possible, they will go back as a pack and rescue a downed, fellow coyote. And remove it. Like you've taken them off the road. I've read that they will do that. I don't know if that's true or not, but they.
I don't know that, but I can tell you this is that they teach us a great lesson, and that lesson is to not kill indiscriminately. And the reason why they teach us that lesson is that it's been actually scientifically proven that it's in their genetics that when they are being killed left and right, what they do when they do their howls at night, it's like a roll call. So they want to know how many are out there. This way, the female knows how many pups to have. So the more they get killed and wiped out, the larger the litters actually become due to their genetics, which I find absolutely fascinating and a beautiful thing in life. And they have larger litters. This is why they've been trying to eradicate them for 100 years and they can't because they keep coming back. So what does that tell you? Leave them alone. They'll control their own numbers. Nature is a beautiful thing. It takes care of itself, right? They'll take care of themselves. People just want to poison them, shoot them, kill them, whatever. They keep coming back. So there's your lesson. Don't kill indiscriminately, right?
Now, I grew up around coyotes. There are a lot here in this area, and there were a lot in Canada. Everywhere I've ever lived, I think there's been a pretty healthy coyote population. And people would complain that they would come down and just, steal their cat or their little dog and kill it. And so that is a problem that has been reported. On the other hand, we've moved in, our cities sprawl out, our areas sprawl out, and so they're pushed, their original territory is kind of taken from them. So I don't know, what are
This is
your
true, and their prefer their they prefer as prey rodents. They like rodents and rabbits and stuff. That's what they'll go for first. They don't generally go for bigger stuff unless they're desperate, right? You were talking about the cats and dogs. I mean, that's unfortunate, and that can happen. But when it comes to farmers wanting to protect their herds, you can protect your herd by getting a donkey because coyotes are absolutely terrified of donkeys. Donkeys hate coyotes, and donkey will take out a coyote, no problem. So if you put, there's so many donkeys out there that have been neglected and abused that need homes. You as a farmer could get a donkey, and for the price of feeding that donkey, you would have your protection, but they'd rather just, shoot them and kill them, right? So.
That is interesting. That's interesting. And you said that in times in your life you've worked at animal rescue places too.
Yes, I did
Is that how you
about
learned about the abuse to donkeys? Because I've never heard that.
there's all kinds of donkeys on farms that have been abused and neglected. In my rescue work, I never worked with donkeys, but I know of a donkey sanctuary in Ontario that I visited a few times. And I got educated on them, and there's a lot of they're not the only neglected and abused animals on farms, right?
Yeah, that's sad. That's unfortunate. When I was a child, my parents wanted to take us to the circus, and so they did. And I'd never been to one. I was horrified by it, just horrified. I cried. I made a big fuss of it because of the, I said these animals that are there. This can't be good for the animals to be these elephants that are ridden around on so that, somebody can stand up and balance on them. So animals in captivity, it's always kind of bothered me. Zoos, circuses,
Yeah,
that kind of
I'm
thing.
not a fan of zoos. The last time I was in a zoo was probably around 2000. It was in Stuttgart, Germany. And because, Germany, the population is so high, there's not a lot of space for anything. So this was a really cramped zoo. And you just saw, like, I did not enjoy it at all. I left with a bad feeling because you just see the animals in these enclosures that are not normal for them, and you're being looked at all day by people, and I can't imagine what they're going through, right? So, yeah, I'm not a fan of zoos. Although
No.
I will say, maybe the people do some good work and maybe they do help save some animals and that sort of thing. So I'm not going to say they're evil people, but I don't like zoos either. So
What were you doing in Stuttgart?
I was on vacation.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, visiting friends in the province of Baden-Württemberg. And that's the province that Stuttgart's in. So,
Okay.
yeah. So, the Organite. Did you want to talk about the
I
Organite,
do.
right?
I
So,
want to talk about the Organite
okay.
now, but before we talk about the Organite, I'm making all these rules here to the conversation. But you told me, did you not, that it was at a protest that you met the Indian that,
Yes.
okay,
Yes.
now.
So, I'll just explain. There's some backfill to this. I first learned about Organite probably about 15 years ago, and this was during the peak of when I was being gang stalked. And I learned about it, and I knew of it, and it was always in the back of my head, and I didn't even think of acquiring it at that time, right? So I moved here in 2019 from Eastern Canada, and starting in 2017, I began to get sick every day. I was vomiting every day, several times to the point of dry heaving because there's nothing left, right? And this was just about every single day. So, of course, back then I was still kind of had trust in the medical in medicine. So I went to doctors. At first they had put me on anti-nauseants that they give to pregnant women, and that wasn't doing it. I was still vomiting. Then they had put me through an endoscopy, and that's totally torturous. I don't wish an endoscopy upon anyone. That's where they stick the camera down your throat and into your stomach. And they couldn't find anything. And then it was just carrying on and carrying on. Then another solution was she sent me for a brain MRI. You ever been in an MRI machine?
No.
You probably don't want to be because I had to go in full. And I never thought I was that claustrophobic until that point, but it was like being in a casket where the top is right in front of you, and I almost hit the pit. There's a panic button, and I almost hit that. And of course, they never found anything. So this just continued, and I had no solutions. And then I moved here in 2019. And by 2020, I had gotten into the protest movement because of COVID. And I met a Northern Plains Cree medicine man. He was in the movement. And I worked with him for a couple of years eventually, and he was a maker of Organite, and I knew about Organite, and I go, you know what? I want to buy some from you. So I got the Organite. The vomiting stopped. It absolutely stopped. No more of it. Okay. And then I confirmed that because I had gone away for a few days and I didn't take any Organite with me. And when I was away, I got sick again. I got back around the Organite. I'm good again. So that tells me that my sickness was being caused by all the shit that's in the air. The EMF, the 5G, the microwave, the Bluetooth, the Wi-Fi stuff. That's what was making me sick. So from that day on, I never. My Organite is always close to me.
Okay, so.
I truly believe that there are many people out there that have maladies that they do not have us know what they're about. Whether it be could be like I would suspect that like bad insomnia, bad pain, this sort of thing that I was going through, the nausea. I'll bet you there's all kinds of people out there that are suffering from that, and no doctor is able to fix it because they can't figure out what it is. And I guarantee you it's from the stuff in the air, right?
Very interesting. Now you said that you make it, he was making it, you studied with him. What is involved in that?
Well, I don't know. Like, should we talk about Wilhelm Reich? I think that there's,
Well, we can. Yeah, sure.
yeah, I because just for the people that out there that don't understand what organite is and where it came from and all this, I'll just try to briefly explain that it was orgone energy was discovered by Dr. Wilhelm Reich in the 1930s. He was an Austrian psychoanalyst. And he was looking for ways to just improve the health of people and the health of the planet. And he discovered orgone energy. Now, orgone energy, it's also known in other circles as prana or chi. It's life force energy. The ORG part of orgone comes from, this is the same energy that powers the human orgasm. So it's a total life energy. Now, if you go looking this up in that, it was always treated as pseudoscience, and people debunk this stuff. But when you work with it, you just know. Wilhelm Reich was arrested by the American government and thrown in prison for 2 years, and he died in prison. And they burned 60 tons of his materials. He had built something called an orgone accumulator. And I know somebody in the city who's actually built one. And it's like a closet-sized thing that you walk
Yeah, I've
into and
seen a
you sit
picture
in.
of the I've seen a picture of the cabinet.
Yeah. And basically, he had the cure for cancer. He had the cure for cancer. So obviously, these types of things, the government can't let you do that, just like water-powered engines and all that sort of thing. You can't let this stuff go. Tesla's work of drawing electricity from the air. We could do that right now and solve every electrical problem. So, orgone energy, orgonite is what generates the orgone energy, and orgonite is based upon, think of a quartz crystal. So when you take a quartz crystal, and if you put your hands on it and squeeze a little bit, you're actually creating a very small amount of piezoelectricity. And when you take those same crystals and you put them under extreme pressure all the time, they're creating piezoelectricity all the time at different levels, depending on how much pressure you're putting on them, right? So you combine those quartz crystals with other materials in layers. So natural materials like minerals and rocks, and then layers of metals. And that's to distribute energy and so forth. And with the combination of all those, you're creating orgone energy. Orgone energy is what makes the sky blue. So think of the orgonite as kind of an air scrubber. So what it does between the piezoelectricity and the orgone, you're protecting yourself from EMF, microwave, 5G, Wi-Fi, this sort of thing. There are people out there that make small orgonite pucks, and they'll bury them next to like cell towers and that, so that they can absorb all the bad stuff coming out of the cell towers. Once again, if you go on the internet, it's going to be called a pseudoscientific concept.
Well, also too, I know that I mean, Alan never made a study of orgone energy or orgonite, but he did, and I'm kind of fuzzy on it. He did look into Wilhelm Reich. Wasn't Reich one of the Frankfurt School members? Did he come over with the Frankfurt
He
School?
may have been like he did not hang with some people that I admire. Like he hung with Sigmund Freud, right? And I know that he was also into Marxism at some point. So
Yeah, I think I think that that is what I got from Alan. Also, too, there was the I think that there was a component of generating or accumulating the orgone energy that had a sexual component to it. That I think Alan thought was unsavory, but he had looked into that. I don't know anything about it. I just remember hearing him. I actually remember his side of a conversation once that he had with someone about the orgone cabinet. But I can't really speak to it because I haven't looked into him.
yeah, like I said, this is the same energy that powers the human orgasm. So that's where the sexual end comes from,
Did
right?
you, and I mean, just addressing that, did you look into anything he might have written about that or?
I actually have not.
Okay. I'm just curious.
But I have other examples of orgonite right next to me that I could show
Okay.
you.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
So the one around my neck, this one gives me a 5 foot radius of protection from stuff. Sometimes I'll carry it in my pocket, but it's always with me.
And when we see you say stuff, you mean EMF and microwave and that kind of thing. That's stuff.
The 5G, all that stuff, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. This is an example. This was made by another man in Edmonton, and this is done in copper. And what you can see is the quartz crystals are at the bottom, and this is a resin which creates all the compression. And there's also other things in there like copper. He's got jasper stones in this, obsidian. So we're harnessing all the stuff that comes off minerals and that sort of thing, also, right? Bunch of different energies. This particular one here is the same thing, but you can see the quartz crystals. And this one has a range of about 50 feet. Now, this one has a range of about 2 kilometers. And what we do with these also is we put these outside and they bust clouds. We can bust open clouds with this. And obviously that's where the pseudoscience comes in and go, no, you can't. You have to be around it and see it and see it happen, and then you'll know that this stuff works, right? This is another example. So this was made by the Cree medicine man, and he uses a different technique. And actually, in the resin, the orgonite that's made from the resin, what a lot of people do is they make pyramids, resin pyramids out of them, right? To amplify the energy. So you'll find it also in pyramid form. This is another technique that's used to make the orgonite, and this is layers, layering, and in between the layers is organic beeswax. And the more you put layers, the more it compresses. And that's where we get the compression. There's also something in here called shungite. Have you ever heard of shungite? Shungite is meteor rock from the Shungi region in Russia. And I use it in water purification. Peter the Great used to issue it to his soldiers. They would carry it in their pockets and use it for water purification. And it has some serious properties to it. So there's also shungite in here. And at the top, we have copper at the very top. I actually built the last few layers on this one. He puts it in blue because the blue relates to orgone energy, and it relates also to your throat chakra. He has his own touch in here with some of the natural materials. So he put in bear fat. There's bear fat in here. Me being the animist that I am, we truly believe we're carrying bear spirit in this, okay? This one has a range of 2 to 3 kilometers, and it busts open clouds also. Other benefits of Orgonite include health benefits. Now, I would never recommend this to just strictly use on a major malady, but the medicine man, he had cancer in his throat, and he cured his own cancer with sea carbon 60, Rick Simpson oil, and Orgonite. So a combination of all of them, right?
Is what is the is it Red Simpson oil?
Rick Simpson oil.
Rick's
So it's
oh, that's cannabis. Yeah.
yes, it's cannabis oil, and it's named after Rick Simpson, who developed that particular type of cannabis oil. It's very potent. It actually stops seizures. There's people who who had seizures, and it'll stop seizures. So there's all these great things out there that can be benefited, but they're deemed illegal and that sort of thing. So he cured it using a combination of that. Now, also, this works on plants and trees and makes them grow exponentially. People put Orgonite near their plants and they get amazing results. And like I said, it can be used. I would use it. You can use it for minor maladies, but I wouldn't recommend. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to say, hey, you got cancer. Here's Orgonite. Just take that. I'm not going to do that. Would be irresponsible. But major maladies, when using a combination of different things, including Orgonite, you could get some decent results. That being said, there's another energy I work with also. And that's plasma energy. It's also known as Kesha energy, and it's named after another pseudoscientist, and his name is Dr. Mehran Kesha, and he is an Iranian nuclear physicist, and you will not find a lot on him online. His foundation is online. It's called the Kesha Foundation. And they call it pseudoscience in that, yet the governments of China and Iran are very interested in his work. He does something, he works with something called GANS, gases nanostate. Now, I don't work with gases nanostate, but what he does is they create MagRav fields, they're called. So it's a combination of magnetic and gravitational fields, which creates plasma energy. And he one of his big research things is into transportation, and that this energy could be used for transportation, and it can be used for health. I know that they used like amino acid enriched liquids and powders with liquid GANS materials, and they also make water with this energy in it, and it supposedly it has great health results and all this. So I don't know a lot about Dr. Kesha and plasma energy because the Cree medicine man stumbled upon this kind of by mistake. He knew nothing about Dr. Kesha and that. And the main component that he works with is nano-coated copper. And nano-coated copper is part of the plasma process with Dr. Kesha. And nano-coated copper is just copper that's been superheated, like in a fire, and then it's pulled off and it's cooled, and the properties change on that. So what I'm going to show you next is plasma wands. And I know that everybody's going, woo, wands, right? Yeah, you do put your intention through these wands, and you can think of it like a magic wand. Okay. This is one of the wands. This is a quartz crystal, This is shungite. It's connected but through nano-coated copper with tektite, and there's also magnetite in this. There we go. There's nano-coated copper. This, everybody's going to call me nuts and all this sort of thing. This takes out chemtrails. I can take out a chemtrail with this if it's being laid. Now I have to catch it when it's being laid. So if I go outside, I always keep a wand near me because this is another smaller Kesha wand. Just to side note, it's legit because you can actually buy very low-level Kesha wands on the internet. So they are making these things and they are confirming Kesha energy in that. It's just that these are Kesha wands on steroids, okay? Because they're homemade. They're not made by any, but you use them for minor maladies, for one thing. I have bad eye allergies, and I used to take prescription meds for it because nothing over the counter would work. Like they would get so bad, like the pain and the I wouldn't be able to see. It was so bad. And when I started taking this wand, if my eye allergies come up, all I got to do is take this 30 seconds each eyelid, hold it on there, it goes away, the eye allergies. And one of the benefits that happened when I was working on my eye allergies is that I had a skin tag on my eyelid, and the skin tag actually got removed eventually over time. It just melted down. And I also had a cyst on my net that I would apply the energy to, and after about a month or two, it went away. So it can also be used on minor pain and this sort of thing. But it's also the type of thing that I say, if you were going to try using it for something major, you combine it with something. And because I don't recommend that. But yes, this will take out chemtrails. When the chemtrails have been laid, I can put this energy on the chemtrails, and they won't dissolve. So basically, they won't disperse. They'll just stay solid. And even I don't know what happens to them. Eventually, the wind just takes them away or whatever, but they were unable to dissolve. We can use this also on plants and trees and make them grow exponentially. I did that over the past couple of years. I did some crazy stuff with trees in the neighborhoods. I would put the energy on them maybe about for 60 seconds a day for a few months. And I had live new branches growing out of half dead trees. I had like one type of tree growing out of another type of tree, just crazy stuff going on. Like, and it's this energy.
All right. So, well, what I wanted to do, and if you're comfortable with this, I just wanted to lay a little bit of early history and then going in, set the stage, and just throw out a few things that I know that might be interesting. We don't have to go into detail or anything, but in a nutshell, you there is some, I guess you could call it family trauma and neglect. And early joining of the Canadian military. And if and I and then I want to get a little bit of that in there, and I want to get when the harassment started, and perhaps even what you think the why is of that. So I've just given you a huge chunk of information to cover, but
Wow.
it,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yes, I am a targeted individual. And when things first started happening to me, I had no idea what was going on. This would be around 2011 or so.
Were you still in the military at that time, or were you out?
No, I left the military in 2000, so that's going back quite a ways.
And you were in for how long?
I was in for 13 years.
And what branch?
Army.
Army, okay. Were you
Yes.
stationed abroad or just in Canada?
No, I was just in Canada. There wasn't a lot going on at that time, so Yeah, no tours. So this strange things were happening to me. This is all part of what they do. I would notice that I would come home from work and there'd be things moved around in my place. There would be things missing. I would have vehicles following me. They make themselves obvious that they're following you. This is what they do at the first time. They want to make it obvious that something's being done to you. And I really didn't know what was going on until I started looking on the internet and then finding people with similar experiences. And then I came across this term, gang stalking. And it would seem that everything that I was reading about in there were things that were being done to me. There's something called street theater. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I don't think so.
Oh, it's where.
I mean, in terms of, yeah, I've seen street theater in New York and LA and London, et cetera, but we're
No,
not
this
talking
is the.
about mimes and juggling it.
No, okay, so when it comes to gang stalking, like this is a program. This is a worldwide program, and it has roots in we talked about this before, Zersetzung. It has roots in East Germany and the Stasi, and they developed ways to take people who may be considered a threat to the government or whatever, and they do things to them to make them basically go crazy, right?
And can you tell listeners what Zersetzung means, what that word means? Because decomposition or subversion. That's what it means. Decomposition or subversion. It was a
So it
sys
would be decomposition or subversion of a human.
Yeah, so it's a
Basically.
systematic psychological warfare technique employed by the Ministry for State Security, the Stasi, in East Germany in the 1970s and 1980s. And here are some examples of it: covert psychological manipulation. Instead of arresting dissidents, the Stasi used informal collaborators to subtly undermine targets' mental stability, professional standing, personal relationships through anonymous defamation, forged correspondence, and engineered conflicts. Goal of paralysis was any kind of fragmentation or paralyzation or isolation of the subject through by inducing self-doubt, paranoia, withdrawal, effectively neutralizing. And then there was something called formalization. The ta oh, this is the history of formalizing it. Stasi Directive Number 1 of 76, issued January 1976, which codified the decomposition measures as a core operational principle. And it is estimated that between 300 to 500,000 people were victims of Stasi abuses in general, with approximately 5 to 10,000 being targeted by Zersetzung operations. And many of the people suffered irreversible psychological damage.
So this is an operation. It really is. And because it's being run by intelligence agencies, Freemasonic groups, police, this sort of thing, they know everything they want to know about you. They will plant, like with today's technology, they probably can get you through satellite and microwave and that sort of thing, right? They know everything about you. And what they'll do is they'll actually pay people. They pay people. I saw a video of a guy who actually confronted somebody who was following him in his car everywhere, and it turned out to be an old man, and the old man told him that he was doing it for gift cards. Okay. Yeah. So they pay people a few bucks or gift cards, and people don't care. They will tell them like to be around a person and say things in a conversation with somebody else that'll trigger things in me, like that they somehow know this about me. In the meantime, it was totally random stranger, and it starts to play with your head. There was sleep deprivation. I am certain that I was being either microwaved or something because I wasn't able to sleep for days at a time. And then what would happen is I'd get to work, and then that's when I'd be tired and wanting to fall asleep. And I'd be struggling to stay awake all day. But I'm thinking to myself, okay, when I get home, I'll be able to sleep. And then I get home, and then I try to go to sleep, and I can't sleep. There's vehicle, like we talk about Alan with the helicopter and the what was done in the fireplace. I was being fall. There's noise. There's something called noise campaigns, where you'll get just noises for no reason at certain times. Sometimes with me it was sirens, because the emergency responders are in on this. Police, ambulance, fire personnel—they're big on that because a lot of them are Freemasons, and I can track. My gang's talking back to the Freemasonic Lodge in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. That's who was kind of running the operation on me.
Can you say you had a theory as to why they were doing this, or you never really?
Basically, they do this to people that they consider are some sort of a threat. Like I'm sort of some sort of a threat to, I don't know, government. Spiritual threat, whatever. I don't know exactly why they went after me, but I know that there are thousands on this earth that are going through the same thing.
Well, there's some, I sent you a talk that Alan had with Eleanor White, and she was a targeted individual. Do you remember that audio?
I believe I listened to it, yeah.
I think you did. And this was one of the earlier interviews that Alan did. Her name was Eleanor White, and I can link to that. But she had a lot of very odd things happen to her, and some of it felt like directed energy of some sort, but some of it was gang stalking, where people would just show up. There'd be a wide open parking lot. This would be an example. I don't know if this is street theater, but you've got a parking lot where there's plenty of spaces to park, and she's just pulling her car in, and all of the sudden there's four other cars that come, like they want that spot when there are lots of other places for them to be. So that would be something that happened to her that she pointed out to him. Now,
Yeah, one of the things I could be shopping, like if I was going to spend my day doing shopping in various places, I would shop at one place, and then the same person who was shopping at me would show up at a place I was at next, and then would show up at another place that I was at, and it wasn't coincidence or anything like that. It was being done on purpose. All I know is eventually, you start to doubt yourself. You start to doubt your own sanity. They go after your friends and family, and I don't even know to this day what they did to some of my friends. But then they didn't want to have anything to do with me after a while. The goal is to get you isolated, and they very very much did that. They got me isolated, and there's three suicide attempts. And they were, when I look back on them, they were comical because I didn't know what I was doing. That's why I wasn't successful enough. So like I tried taking a couple hundred sleeping pills, and I thought that was going to be it, but Then nothing happened to me except I got really sick for a couple of days. And then I go back and I start looking at what's in the sleeping pills. And it's like, oh, well, basically, to kill myself, I'd have to take a pallet load. So, that didn't work out. I was going to drown myself. And I went down to a spot because this was when I was living in Burlington. So it's very urban. So, but it's on the lake, and I was looking for a spot where the water was deep enough to jump into. And I ended up going down to a lift bridge between Burlington and Hamilton, and that was a good spot. And I was just standing there, waiting. I was going to do it in a while. And then what was coming around was a boat from Hamilton Fire Department with a diver in it. And they were kind of buzzing around me and stuff. And then I realized when I look up at the controls of the lift bridge, there's cameras everywhere. So I guess I was being watched, and I probably showed the signs of suicidal individuals. So this boat just kept buzzing around, and I'm going, well, this isn't going to be successful because they're going to jump in and save me, right? So there was that, and then there was. The point where I decided I was going to cut my wrists, and I was going to do it in the bathtub, and it was really going to go down. I had the knife, and it was just going in, and the phone rings, and I'm like, okay, well, should I answer this or not? So I decided, okay, I'm going to answer it, right? And it happened to be my sister, and she had gotten wind of my condition, and she basically told me that if I didn't go to the hospital and admit myself, she was calling police on me, right? So I ended up admitting myself to hospital, and I was put into the psychiatric unit for a couple of weeks. And here's the thing, when I first entered the psychiatric unit, there's a guy that was in there, and he's playing guitar for some of the patients. This guy was one of my gang stalkers. This was one of the guys that he would show up at the library all the time when I went to the library because I didn't have a computer, so I'd go to the library to use the computer, and that was one place they liked to send people, right? And this same guy was sitting there playing the guitar. Okay, so this is what they do. Like, they followed me right into the psych unit, and so I was there for a couple of weeks, and then I was released, and I was living under the influence of the mental health people for a couple of years. The gang stalking totally receded then, but they would send me reminders. Like, for instance, there was a bottle of cleaner that I wanted to get from my car. I knew it was in there. And I went down to get it, and it wasn't there. And then 2 days later, it was there. So this is the types of thing. Like, they'll enter your car and mess with controls. They'll take things and, put them back after, this sort of thing. So. No sound?
Sorry about that. Alan had some strange things happen to him. I've had, things that appeared kind of inexplicable, but he said early on, because he would hear from people from time to time who identified as a targeted individual, they would say, something that they were going through and what was happening. And he said, you always have to take it seriously. That we don't have any idea what's going on with this person. We don't know if it's a figment of their imagination or if something is really happening to them. Because he said the technology for anything that's being reported, like, we'd look at some of the emails, he said the technology exists to do this. And when you're talking about Zersatzung, the studying of it just to see how you react under that kind of stress or that kind of sustained experiment, that's just so invaluable to them. That this is something that control freaks. I don't want to say them like they them like you know, but y every country has different bodies, different intelligence agencies. And when you're talking about giving someone a gift card to follow you around, this is something else that Alan said to me early on. I reported a very strange thing that had happened to me. What you're describing about you're somewhere and you notice some people, and then you're somewhere completely across town, or and there they are. It's almost impossible that they could do that. And in Canada with Alan, I experienced that with him once when we were out. You know, of
Okay, so you know
yeah.
what I'm talking
Oh,
about.
exactly. I mean, it's very
Yeah.
weird too, because it's a message that's being delivered. You know, the way Sudbury's laid out, it's a not a huge city. I think the whole the
I've been
greater,
to Sudbury.
yeah, greater Sudbury is like 200,000 or a little more than 200,000 people now, but it's very sprawling. And so when you're on one side of town at a pharmacy, and then you drive completely across town, the likelihood of running into the same person at a different, you know, at a grocery store or a post office or something is very small. But that happened to us one day with a person being in three parts of town, exactly where we were. So obviously you're being followed and monitored. And
Yeah,
yeah, he'd
and
say, well, you can't talk about this kind of stuff because you sound crazy.
no, you can't.
But
Yeah, it does sound crazy. I had one guy that would show up at the library and he'd sit across from me at another computer and he'd wear a shirt. And the shirt had the WB from Warner Brothers, but it said, Warn a Brother. So what's he trying to tell me there, right?
Right.
He's a Freemason. They're heavily involved in this stuff. And I know for a fact that there's some guys who I communicated with from the army afterwards for years. And I know that some of them turned out to be Freemasons, and I'm sure that some of them were involved in doing stuff to me,
Well, the
right?
arm, I mean, military is its own brotherhood too, you know,
Yes.
just as police and fire department, you know, firemen.
There's plenty of Freemasons in the military. So,
Well,
the big thing about gang stalking is the plausible deniability, right? It's so well designed and so well done and well orchestrated. First of all, but they have an endless budget because people would say, well, why would they put all this kind of effort and money into doing this to you? It doesn't matter. Their pockets are endless, okay? The plausible deniability, everything that they do, they make it so that you can't prove that that happened, right? That's why they don't physically assault you or harm you. If they could, they would, but they don't, because obviously if you get assaulted, that's something that you know, there's marks, there's scratches, bruises, whatever, that it can be proven. So they make it very hard to prove that any of this stuff that they're doing to you is going on because of the plausible deniability, right?
Well, you know, there's someone that talked to Alan, and I'm not going to say they are a public figure, a person that some people would know who they are, that some people would know who I'm talking about. So I'm going to leave them unsaid. But they were reporting to Alan some things that had happened to them that were targeting them in the way, you know, I have a friend who says we're all targeted individuals, and boy, is he right, because we are, you know, at a level we are all absolutely tracked and traced, monitored, played with, you know. I mean, if you think about it,
World War III is the war on the human, so.
yes. So, but these people who are, you know, apparently quite sane. There's no reason this just started happening to them. They had some theories, but they really didn't understand why. It started off with very small, odd things. I think she was a neat housekeeper, so she'd hang her towels a certain way in the bathroom. It'd be fold over, it'd be more or less in the middle, and they'd come home from work, and the hand towel would be all the way over on the bar, one side or the other. It wouldn't be in the middle. And she said, "Well, I wouldn't do that, I just wouldn't do that. It's weird, but so lots and lots of little things like that."
I had slowly watched my spoons go down to zero. My spoons would be stolen. I would find things in my laundry because I lived in an apartment building, so it was a shared laundry space. So I didn't sit down there with my laundry. I'd put it down there and then come back, and then I'd find like somebody else like. It happened way too many times. Like I can understand that sometimes you might pick up somebody else's sock or something like that, but this would happen way too many times where somebody else's piece of clothing would be in my laundry. They change the controls in your car. Like you come to your car, get in, and it's the middle of winter and the air conditioning's on. That sort of thing. And or the stereo is on when you turned it off. Yeah, they do all this sort of stuff, right?
Well, the reason what got them actually to let Alan know what was going on is they went on a trip and they were gone for several days. I'm just going to say several days. Now, she said, whenever we would go even more than 24 hours, we turn the water off. We just turn the water off. So there's no way that something can bust or go through and, at the main. And, they had a system, I guess, or who knows, she would just report back to her husband, I just turned the water off. So they went on a trip, and when they came back, the water in the bathtub was going. It had completely soaked and flooded the entire house. Their flooring was ruined. That's when they called Alan. So it ruined. They had to have the whole floor redone, and she said, "There's no way that I left the bathtub running. I turned the water off on, the main." So to make sure, So, but there it was, water running in the bathtub, the house flooded, and she said, "We, neither one of us had even been in the bath the day that we left."
They like to remind me that they're still around because they are. And it happens every time I move into a new place. I've been in this place, I just moved in May. And sure enough, about 3 weeks ago, I discovered that this is what they do. Like they'll try and take something that that you're going to probably want to use in a little while or something and notice that it's not there. So they took a pair of scissors from my table and they took a manual for my new chainsaw. Gone, right? So I don't give a shit anymore because what this tells me is that I'm doing something right. That I must be very important if they want to still continue this and remind me that they're doing this shit, right? Because they won't take it any further than that. And it's okay because what happens after that, I do a little bit of magic, but it's only for protection, and I send a spell their way. Okay. That's the only magic I'll do is for my own protection.
So
So then
how did you get into the magic?
That was over many years, learning from a couple of individuals, just little spells that you can use and that sort of thing. I don't do black magic. I only do magic to protect myself, and that's the only time I'll use it. So, I also have a friend in the United States in Arizona. She's also a targeted individual, and she doesn't care anymore either, right? Like she's come to her place before where it looks like somebody's broken in, where they've put in a bunch of marks into the door and that. She doesn't care anymore, and I don't care anymore. And I think that that's the best approach, because when I move in and something gets done to me, I do a spell, nothing happens to me again. That tells me that something's worked. And like I said, I just say to myself that, hey, I must be important. And I put a big smile on my face and I keep carrying on. That's it. I know that I'm spiritually protected. When I look back at the gang stalking that was going on, one of the key players back then was a Pentecostal minister. And to explain how this guy was in my life would take forever, but I knew that he was no good, but I was so desperate for any sort of help or whatever. He was somebody I was going to. In the meantime, he was involved in it. A few years later, he was killed in a car accident. He was driving on the road by himself and there was nothing else around him. He drove off the road and was killed. One of my friends who betrayed me back then, I think that the gang stalkers, they got to him somehow and he turned against me. His son was killed a couple of years ago in an auto accident in the United States. One of the other gang stalkers, I know his wife, after the shot, she got like twitching and this sort of thing that wouldn't go away, and they're suing the government and stuff. So there's been a lot of bad things have happened to people who have been involved in this.
Well, if you believe in karma, it's not a good thing to be doing, but there's a cause and effect. Karma aside, there's cause and effect. So people who spend their lives doing bad things often are going to end up having bad things done to them. You lay a lot of, groundwork to make yourself people's enemies, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And my personal belief, I know this sounds out there, is that we've entered into the age of Aquarius, and I believe that karma travels faster now.
When do you think we entered into the age of Aquarius?
Not long ago. Some people say we're not in there, but I believe we are. And I believe that we are at the beginning of a new age. So the way that what has to happen is major chaos. Like we've got to see chaos and all that sort of thing play out. And then we start going into a golden age again.
Well, where did you hear about the Golden Age? I'm a pessimist.
Are you?
Yeah.
No,
But tell me.
I believe we just quit the Bronze Age, which was the Dark Age, and I believe we're heading into a new Golden Age.
Well, there are definitely people that I know that say that it's all cyclical, all everything is cyclical.
Yeah, based on cycles.
Part of my pessimism, I think, is that I really do, in so many ways, take Alan at his word. There's a couple of things here. I was looking for this is the new book. Can I give you a shout out? Is that okay, Ron?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So there were three people who were very instrumental in helping me accomplish this, the actual funding that was necessary to do it. And I thanked you all at the beginning of the book, but Mike and Steph and Ron, and you are the Ron that helped me make this happen. So shout out. So you're in, a big part of this. And I thought it was very funny that those three people that I just called out are all Canadians.
It's that Canadian influence thing. I don't
Yeah.
know.
And it's very funny too, because Alan used to say of Americans, like orderers and donators, he said, well, the Americans are very generous people. And but my experience has been certainly with this project, the Canadians are very generous people. So, but he said, this is what really struck me, especially I've said very often it's on page five. Well, that was the first edition. It's on page 12 of the second edition, where Alan said, this is not a rehearsal. This is the final phase of humanity as we know it. Sounds shocking? Then go back to your, and he breaks up the word television, and continue your programming. And this is something that, I didn't ask him. I remember after he passed away, I was thinking, why did that not leap out at me before? And why didn't I ask him how long this phase was? And, he said, this is the final phase of humanity. Now, on the next page, my page 13, second edition, he wrote, he's talking about the precession, right, of the planets, the age. So that would be the age of Aquarius, the age of Pisces. He said, the fact is, there have been many, quote, ages, and humanity as we know it has been around for millions of years. And so he goes on there. But, so there are ages, there are cycles, and yet Alan had every reason to believe that we are at a very precarious place for humanity coming through. There have always been
Oh,
people, yeah, and I
we
can.
definitely are.
Yeah. So I was looking for the bit on Aquarius here, but he never called out really a time or a date, but for him, coming up on 2030 was a very important date, just depending on, the plans that they said themselves, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. But I was also struck by listening to him talk to Jackie Petrou. This was when he started the interviews with her, the 24 interviews that became Waiting for the Miracle. And he was telling her to read this book, and she said, well, Alan, I haven't read Plato's Republic yet. And he said, you better hurry up because we only have about 30 years left. And so when we were covering that in book club, I thought, oh my goodness, that was 28 years ago. Now 28 and a half years ago. So I think he thought that we were either, imminently going into the age of Aquarius, or as you say, might have already been there. A lot of people say we're 100 years away from it, but I think it's very clear if you look around that we are at a place of great, great, phenomenal change right now.
Absolutely. And when he said the end of humanity, I think we can look at it as the end of humanity as we know it. I don't think humans are going to be wiped off the planet, but it would be the end of humanity as we know it if the whoever you want to call them, the controllers, whatever, get what they want. But as far as I'm concerned, like, okay, so when it comes to the chemtrails and all that sort of thing, fighting that, for me, I know it's a losing battle, but I'm going to die with my boots on. Okay, so I will never stop speaking truth. I will never stop speaking, doing what I do. And at least if we're going to go down, I'm going down fighting. That's the way I'm going down.
Well,
But
there's.
there's other schools of thought. My friend, she truly believes that we are going to have actual cataclysms because of Mother Earth, and that she is a living, breathing being, that she's going to have enough, and that's going to be it for a lot of the people on the planet. I believe it's possible. I've heard the theories of the cyclical destruction of the Earth, where I've heard like Last time it was flood. Before that it was ice, and it goes ice, flood, fire. So the next will be the fire, a purification. I don't know, but I don't. I do think that that's possible also. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I believe that's possible also.
Well, I mean, if we're anthropomorphizing, I personally think that Mother Earth can take an awful lot. All you have to do is see the way a trail in the woods that you've cut can grow over just like that. Mother Earth can take a lot. I'm not sure about our Father in Heaven, how much he's willing to put up with, if we're anthropomorphizing. But Alan said that there, I love this. I've been very struck by it, and I remember it often. There is more than one reason to enter a battle. You don't just enter the fight because you're going to win. You may enter it and be, it's a losing battle. You enter it, he said, because it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely, 100%. That's why I do what I do. And hey, I give it the old college try, right?
What year in all of this post-military, in the midst of the stalking and harassment, what year did you discover his talks? I know I've asked you that before, but I forgot.
I started listening to Alan probably around 2009, something like that. And I had first heard, I think I told you this, I had first heard him oddly enough on the car radio on McMaster University Radio in
Oh,
Hamilton,
that's right.
Ontario.
Yes,
Yeah. So he was, I don't even know if he knew that he was being broadcast on there or not. Yeah, they would broadcast his Sunday shows or something, you know. So I guess some young college students were into his work and putting it out there, right? So.
Well, Alan heard from a bureaucrat in the States. He was state level, but high up at the state level, and when this would probably have been, well, I don't know, sometime between 2007, 2009, when he was really starting to be recognized in the so-called truth and patriot world, that the bureaucrat said, "Oh yeah, everybody listens to you," and in the world of bureaucracy, they're like, "But some of them don't like you." But we all listen because it's a really curious thing. There was another high-placed kind of bureaucrat who approached Alan and said, I think he had gone up to 32nd degree, but he didn't like it. I won't derail the conversation here, but he felt that spiritually, something very bad had happened to him as a result of going through the degrees of Freemasonry. And so he approached Alan, and Alan worked him back degree by degree. And he said to him, "This is how we'll have to do it. We have to work the degrees in reverse order. A lot of studying, a lot of a lot of deprogramming yourself."
And Alan was so, I guess, so giving of himself that he gave that time and effort into
He was
doing that,
amazing.
right?
I mean, he was amazing. He spent a lot of time working with people and talking to people on the phone while I was there. This particular one predated my being there, and I think it predated his RBN show, so he wasn't quite as busy as he became. But yeah, he was very willing to give people a lot of help, a lot of one-on-one help. So it's, to me, inspirational. Which is kind of an ironic thing because I've been reading Morals and Dogma with the book club, and early on,
I ordered
oh,
that book.
good, good,
Yeah, so
good.
I'm going to be way behind you guys, but
Well, that's okay.
I
I
ordered
think
it anyway.
we're way behind us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we had our first session a couple of weeks ago, and I think only a handful had gotten through the first 8 degrees, and we're meeting again on Saturday, a couple of days from now, and that we're to be done with 9 through 16. My recommend.
My impression from you is that it's a difficult read.
Well, it's I'm not sure it's difficult, is that it's a language, it's a style of writing. It was written in 1871, so it's a way of writing that's kind of flowery and long sentences and so forth. And I have said that my retention with it is not that great. So what I'm saying to people is just read it. Don't worry about what you retain. Don't worry about going down all the different avenues of study. Just blaze through it, and what jumps out at you is what's important for you to
I
understand.
mean, picking up the main points of what the guy was about, and what it, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of truth in it for all the spins and the way they're bending people's minds. Like if you're talking about Masons involved in something like gang stalking, the way that the material is written, and I've been exposed to a little bit of it through, looking at some of Albert Mackay's writing and Manly P. Hall, it's appealing to a virtuous, selfless thing. And so that's what I was going to say, is that, one true thing that Pike says is that you should work very hard for other people. Your work should not be just for selfish, like you want to accumulate things and you want to, travel the world and all of that. The work that you do should have a large component of wanting to help other people. So there are all these true nuggets that are in there, but there's always the spin, there's always the bend. And so with something like organized harassment of a fellow citizen, well, A, you're not really a fellow citizen because you're not a brother. And B, all that needs to happen to them, because it's a hierarchy, or as Pike says, it's a beehive system. So you've got your worker bees and you've got the queen bee and all in between there. And so it's as easy as someone above you in the hierarchical system saying, "Okay, John, that guy Ron, he's causing some grief. Now, we can't really tell you why. It's you don't need to know that. But what we need you to do is just follow him everywhere he goes. Yeah, just follow him everywhere he goes, and take his spoons while you're at it." I mean, you just do something that'll drive him crazy. And it's put across that, plausible deniability, plausible that, Ron is not a good guy. Ron is doing some things that aren't good, and this is what we're doing to Ron to keep him in his place. To me, that's how it works, because I don't think that these men who go in it, yeah, are they looking for perks? Are they looking for the little perks and handouts that go along with being a Mason that they know that they'll get if they get into it?
The cronyism.
Yeah, there's some of that there, but I think a lot of it is sold to them that they are making their community a better and safer place.
Yes, this is true too. That's when I was at the height of the gang stalking. I lived in an apartment building, and all my neighbors around me that I used to talk to and all that stopped talking to me for no reason. I'm sure that somebody was going to them and telling them something or saying something about me, right?
Yeah.
In order for them, like to treat me like that after. And I didn't know what I'd done. I mean, you can put like if you have enough influence, you can put somebody into the program. Like if you're say Freemason and somebody pisses you off and you want to get back at him, you could go to the handlers and of the program and go, I want this guy put in the program. It's as easy as that. That's why I say I don't know what the exact root cause of this being done to me was, because I probably pissed off several people over a few years, right? I can think of a few incidents where I pissed off some influential people, right? So it could have come from that. I don't know. The other theory for me is that I was targeted from birth.
That's possible. Well, I hate to end, but I do need to get going on
Okay.
something here. But I've enjoyed this conversation very much, and
Yeah, it was great talking to you.
it's very nice. And so we'll you're I want to hear more about the Orgone at some point. And also, you shared with me before we started recording about the bread making that you're doing. So I'll have to, I gave you a few little pointers and we'll
So by
see.
the next time I talk to you, I'm going to be making a nice fluffy white loaf of
All
bread.
right, good. That's good. And then next week, I will be talking with a husband and wife, Robel and Mimi, and I'm looking forward to that. So I thank you for listening, and thank you again, Ron, for
Thank
doing
you for
this.
having me, Melissa.
Yeah,
Thank you.
thank you.